Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Vayikra. This week also is the Pardes Alumni Road Trip. Save the date and join us in person March 12th in New York City, Tuesday, March 13th in Los Angeles, Wednesday in San Francisco, Thursday, March 15th in Chicago, Shabbat on March 17th in Washington, D.C., March 19th, Monday in Philadelphia, Tuesday the 20th in Boston, and Wednesday the 21st in Toronto. You can also join us online if you wish, but the best is to be there in person. Open for everyone. Please check out all the details on the Pardes website. Rabbi Leon Morris, the president of Pardes, and Rabbi Yaffa Epstein will be on the road trip in person, and they look forward to meeting you. This week, Vayikra with Rabbi Leon Morris. Rabbi Leon Morris is the president of the Pardes Institute. And now, Rabbi Leon Morris.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we begin a new book of the Torah, the third book, Sefer Vayikra, and the first parasha of that book, Parashat Vayikra. This is a challenging parasha and a challenging book for many people. Vayikra el Moshe vayedaber Adonai elav me'ohel moed le'mor. The Eternal called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael va'amarta aleihem adam ki yakriv mikem korban ladonai min ha'behema min ha'bakaru min ha'tson takrivu et korbanchem. Speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when any of you presents a sacrifice, an offering of cattle to the Eternal, he shall choose his offering from the herd or from the flock. The notion of sacrificial offerings, of korbanot, was for much of the last 200 years a kind of anathema for many modern Jews. The most ancient forms of Jewish divine service, of sacrifice, were understood by many moderns to be primitive and outmoded. Although the classic traditional liturgy, our Siddur, continued to reference the ancient sacrificial service that predated it, the very first 19th century liturgical reforms, first in Europe and then in America, removed most of the references to the temple and to sacrifices that had been offered there, and discouraged rituals most directly connected to the memory of the temple service. This was really an expression of the way in which, for modern Jews attempting to shape a modern Judaism, to their sensibilities, the primitive nature of animal and grain sacrifices seem to offer little by way of inspiration or critical ideas. The burning of animals in service to God seemed to them to be cruel. The idea that God was to be found in one central place and most closely served by one select group of people was highly objectionable. Think about the term that scholars use when they describe the sacrificial system as a sacrificial cult, distancing us even more from an attempt to relate in some way to that practice. There is the distorted presentation of the prophets as being opposed to sacrifice that is a common trope in modern Jewish life. The prophets were arguing for a prioritization of ethics over ritual, but not an abandonment of ritual and not an abandonment of sacrifice. And yet, despite all of this modern discomfort with sacrifice, sacrifice, korbanot, and the temple are ubiquitous in Jewish texts and Jewish life. So much of Jewish prayer and study, its terminology and meaning and metaphors that are used, is necessarily connected to the korbanot, to the sacrifices described in the book of Leviticus. Our age, this postmodern early 21st century, I believe opens us up to new possibilities of meaning that connections to sacrifice might provide us with. Texts about sacrifices and prayers about sacrifices present us with opportunities to explore the notions of relationship, gift giving, closeness and distance, the sublimation of violence, and more. So I'd like to begin with an amazing sugya, a Talmudic text from the very end of Masechet Menachot, Tractate Menachot, page 110a. Here we will have two very different conceptual frameworks of understanding the relationship between study and sacrifice. Now, in order to understand this passage, we have to first turn to the end of the Tanakh, the end of the Hebrew Bible, Divrei HaYamim, Bet, 2 Chronicles, chapter 2, verse 3, in which Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, says, Hine ani bone bayit l'shem Adonai Elohai, lahakdish lo lahaktir lefanav ketoret samim, u'ma'arecha tamid v'olot laboker v'la'erev, la'shabatot u'lechodashim, u'lemo'adei Adonai Eloheinu la'olam zot al Yisrael. See, I intend to build a house for the name of the Eternal, my God. I will dedicate it to God for making incense offerings of sweet spices in God's honor, for the regular rows of bread, and for the morning and evening sacrifices on Sabbaths, new moons, and festivals, as is Israel's duty forever. Le'olam zot al Yisrael. And the Talmud in this passage in Tractate Menachot is going to have to deal with the fact that Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, says that the sacrificial system will be le'olam, will be forever. And yet the rabbis of the Talmud, whose voices we'll hear in a moment, they're living in a time in which sacrifices are no longer offered. The temple has been destroyed. So what did Solomon mean by le'olam zot al Yisrael? This is incumbent upon Israel forever. Nothing is forever, seems to be the awareness of the rabbis. So here we turn to this beautiful Talmudic text. Rav Gidel said in the name of Rav, this refers to the altar built in heaven, and Michael, the great ministering angel, stands and offers a sacrifice upon it. So that's one solution. Rav Gidel says in the name of Rav, okay, the temple in this world has been destroyed, but there is a parallel temple in the heavens, which is still functioning and sacrifices are still being offered. And here's where it gets interesting. The Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan said, these are the students who engage in studying the laws of sacrifice. The verse regards them as though the temple were built in their days. Ma'ale aleihem hakatuv ki'ilu nivnem mikdash bimehem. So says Rabbi Yochanan, when Torah students study the laws of sacrifice, it is as if the Torah were rebuilt in their days. It is, I believe he's suggesting, through the study of the laws of sacrifice, it is as if they are actually offering a sacrifice. We'll unpack this in a moment, but just note the notion that the study of sacrifice is a kind of equivalence to sacrifice. Reish Lakish said, what is meant by this verse? And this refers to a verse in next week's parasha. Zot haTorah lo'ola lemincha ulachatat ulaasham. This is the Torah of the burnt offering, the meal offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering. Says Reish Lakish, anyone who engages in the study of Torah, it is as though they sacrificed a burnt offering, a meal offering, a sin offering, and a gift offering. Very similar idea to what we read above by Rabbi Yochanan, but a little broader and a little more encompassing here. Here, Reish Lakish seems to say, when you study Torah, any Torah, not just the laws of sacrifices, it is a kind of equivalence of the sacrifice itself. And he's doing this through a midrash because the rules of the burnt offering are introduced by the words Zot HaTorah. This is the Zot HaTorah Le'ola. This is the Torah of the burnt offering and the grain offering and the sin offering and the guilt offering. So he's able to say that anybody who engages in any Torah study, it is as though they sacrificed these offerings. And now we have an even more radical position vis-a-vis study and sacrifice. Rava objected to this midrash and teaching of Reish Lakish, saying, pay attention to the lamed hashimush, the preposition for or to, le, in the verse that Reish Lakish was just offering a midrash on. And note, says Rava, that it says, le'ola, le'mincha, u'lechatat, v'le'asham. And he says, Rava, that anyone who engages in the study of Torah doesn't need a burnt offering, nor a meal offering, nor a sin offering, nor a guilt offering. He's understanding the repetition of the preposition lamed to be saying lo, not. That if you study Torah, he's reading it, then you don't need lo ola, lo mincha, lo chatat v'lo asham. You don't need an ola offering or a mincha offering or a chatat offering or an asham offering because you have Torah. So I want to suggest that while each of these positions seems to be staking out a bolder claim vis-a-vis the relationship between study and sacrifice, there is an interesting distinction that I see between the position of, let's say, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish on one side and Rava on the other side. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish both see study as a substitute for sacrifice. Reish Lakish sees it more broadly, that any Torah study comes to serve as a substitute for all of the various offerings. Rabbi Yochanan, his position is a little more restrictive. No, it's only study about the sacrifices that serves as a substitute. But both of them understand it as a substitute, that there's something in the act of study that is an equivalent to offering the sacrifice of old. Rava seems to go a bit further. And what I want to call Rava's model of the relationship between study and sacrifice is one of replacement rather than substitution. Says Rava, if you have Torah study, you no longer need any of these offerings. I think both sides of this Talmudic debate have been played out in the modern context, both seeing study and other substitutions for sacrifice like prayer and tzedakah and human suffering, seen these substitutions either as a substitution or as a replacement. In other words, many modern Jews largely embraced the replacement model, that we have replaced sacrifices with prayer and study. And so the impetus to kind of do away with the reminders that keep sacrifice within the realm of our consciousness and imagination was limited by the replacement model. But the traditional Jewish community has largely embraced the substitution model of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which is to keep alive the memory of sacrifice and the symbolism of sacrifice, even as things such as study and prayer come to be its substitute. In other words, the difference between substitution and replacement is replacement, there's been an evolution and there's no longer a need for the initial element of sacrifice. Whereas substitution says, we're doing X instead of Y. We're doing study instead of sacrifice. We're doing prayer instead of sacrifice. But the imaginative possibilities of sacrifice and the reflections and the relevance and the meaning of sacrifice is still held and still claimed. I want to suggest that all of us reconsider the substitution model of sacrifice, that it could expand for us both our understanding of what sacrifice was all about, but it also can elevate and bring new elements to our life of study and our life of prayer. In other words, if we continue to see on some level sacrifice as playing out in our prayer life and in our study life, if prayer and study are seen as substitutes for and not replacements of sacrifice, then there may be elements from the sacrificial system that we want to bring into our life of prayer and our life of study. I think that we have deprived many modern Jews of the opportunity to share in the creation of a virtual temple with other Jews. And I want to present a few ideas of how this might play out and how this might be possible. Moshe Halbertal, a professor of Jewish thought at the Hebrew University and at New York University Law School, has an amazing and beautiful and insightful small book called On Sacrifice. And one of the things that he argues in the book is that at its very core, the meaning of sacrifice is rooted in the desire of human beings to give gifts. And he draws upon an anthropological body of work on the meaning of gift giving, gift theory. One such anthropologist is Marcel Mauss. And he describes as so essential to the human experience the desire to give a gift that we can understand and appreciate and value how strong the human desire is and was to give a gift to God. The problem, though, that Halbertal underscores is that the cycle of gift giving, which is all about giving a gift and then the reciprocity that comes from the gift, that creates a cycle that deepens the relationship between the gift giver and the receiver, and then the receiver becomes a gift giver. The problem with applying that to us and God is that there is such a tremendous gap between us, that if I were to give a gift to my friend, I have almost no question that they would receive it. But if I would give a gift to the king or the queen, I'm not sure that they will receive the gift. And all the more so if I'm speaking about giving a gift to the King of Kings, to the God of the universe. And so that is part of the problem and the anxiety of giving a gift to God. Halbertal notes in the in his book that the very first term used in the Torah for a sacrifice is not korban, as is used in our parasha this week, but the term mincha. And that occurs at the beginning of the book of Genesis, when we're talking about the offerings of Cain and Hevel, of Cain and Abel. And the term mincha is related to the verb lehaniach, which means to lay down or put before. Halbertal writes, the term korban is related to the verb lekarev, meaning to bring forward, approach, or move closer. He writes, both of these words are used in contrast to the common term for gift, a matana, a noun related to the verb latet, which means to give. While matana signifies a gift that has been immediately transferred from giver to receiver, the term mincha or korban, as something that is brought forward or laid before, indicates that it is the receiver who will decide whether to take it or not. In the shift from matana to mincha, from giving to bringing forward, a crucial gap is established between giving and receiving, writes Halbertal. And he goes on to explain that much of the ritual instruction of korbanot is rooted in the anxiety of not knowing whether one's korban, whether one's offering will be received by God or not. So the precision of how it's offered alleviates the anxiety because it increases the likelihood, if we offer it in the same way that we did last time when it was accepted, that it increases the likelihood that it will be accepted this time as well. So there's a lot here, and I want to suggest that by embracing the substitution model of sacrifice, of saying that study and prayer are substitutes, not replacements, for sacrifice, that we can apply this notion of gift giving and the human desire to give a gift to God, we can think about how that would enhance our life of study and our life of prayer. To see in our study and prayer an element of the desire to give a gift to God. Another modern reclamation, reclaiming of the notion of sacrifice and how it can enrich our lives was put forward by the post-Holocaust theologian Richard Rubinstein. Professor Richard Rubinstein was a Hillel director and a writer, and really one of the first Jewish post-Holocaust theologians. He's now in his 90s, and he wrote in his very important collection of essays in 1966 called After Auschwitz, Radical Theology and Contemporary Judaism. He wrote about the way in which sacrifice provided a kind of sublimation of violence, and the way in which a religious life has to have space for all of the elements of the human experience. And so he critiques, in 1966, he critiques the modern discomfort with sacrifice. He writes, an aura of embarrassment hangs over the treatment of sacrifice in contemporary Jewish liturgy. This embarrassment undoubtedly reflects the very old tension between the priestly and the prophetic aspects of Judaism. He goes on to write, there are important reasons why the symbolic assertion of the primacy of sacrifice ought to be retained as a central element in Jewish religious life. The modern embarrassment with sacrifice runs counter to the fact that sacrificial ritual, in real or symbolic expression, has been one of the most universally accepted activities in the majority of the religion of mankind. So he critiques the modern discomfort with sacrifice. And he argues that we should be very, very cautious about describing our age as higher or more advanced. And then he suggests that our age is significantly more violent. And again, he's reflecting on the Shoah, the aftermath of the Shoah, more violent than those more quote unquote primitive times when sacrifices would be offered. And of course, he's not arguing for the reinstitution of animal sacrifices, but he's saying that there's something about a religious life that keeps alive that memory, that just the memory and the words, the study of and the prayer about sacrifice can itself serve to some degree for the sublimation of violence that sacrifice itself fulfilled. He writes, it would seem that the rabbinic compromise represented by the very best response to this dilemma. Judaism never did away with sacrifice entirely until modern times, but Judaism progressively limited the gratuitous harm which the system could do. At first, the animal was the surrogate for the human. Later, after the destruction of the Jerusalem sanctuary, the verbal was the surrogate for the concrete. So here, it's a beautiful statement that the verbal became a substitute, a surrogate for the concrete. I want to suggest that there is much to be gained by rethinking our predisposition to reject the idea of sacrifice and to open ourselves anew to all that Parashat Vayikra and Sefer Vayikra have to offer us. Rubinstein writes, one of the greatest achievements of historic Judaism has been its ability to retain a meaningful aspect of every layer of Jewish religious experience in its contemporary expressions. Nothing which has ever been meaningful in the Jewish past has been entirely suppressed. In concluding, I want to go back to that beautiful Talmudic text from Tractate Menachot. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are claiming that the very meaning of avodah, of sacrificial service, of korbanot, the meaning has become transformed in the aftermath of the temple's destruction. The place of avodah, the place of service to God, has shifted from the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, to the Beit HaMidrash, the study hall. Going forward, the study about sacrifices or any study of Torah would become the offerings themselves. Rabbi Yochanan's boldly adaptive interpretation is representative of a larger rabbinic project in which the human God encounter shifts from the temple to the Beit Midrash. Sacrifice lives on, they suggest, not in a performative manner, but rather in memory, language, and imagination. Study is redefined, not simply as learning in order to do, but as the quintessential religious act. We need new approaches to reclaim these difficult texts in Sefer Vayikra. Although the temple and sacrifice have long ceased to exist, the imaginative, interpretive, and linguistic influence of these texts can indeed last forever. Le'olam zot al Yisrael.
Thank you, Rabbi Morris. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.